Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Our guest today recently returned from a trip to Italy, where he presented a research paper to a G20 interfaith forum on the subject of COVID-19 and religious freedom. Those two seem to be at great odds with each other these days, and some perspective would be greatly appreciated. Nick Miller is professor of church history at Andrews University in Berrien Springs, Michigan, and he's also the director of the International Religious Liberty Institute. I'm proud to have him with us today. Professor Miller, welcome to Life Quest Liberty.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Now, this program is sponsored by Liberty Magazine. Professor Miller, tell us about your trip to Italy and what took place. What did you feel needed to be said to those attending the forum?
Yes, great question. I was actually in Matera, Italy, in middle of May, and we were meeting with a group of religious scholars from around the world, from various traditions, and we were meeting in conjunction with the G20 pre-meetings. The G20 is a gathering of the largest 20 economic nations in the world, and they meet annually to talk about economic and social issues, especially in light of any ongoing crises like the COVID-19 pandemic we're facing. So this was an opportunity to present what we believe were important principles of how religion and religious activity and religious worship should be treated, and maybe more especially not treated, during the time of the COVID pandemic. There's always questions about how you balance religious freedom versus public health and personal health. And often we find, especially secular countries, don't quite get those balances right. And we wanted to bring some important insights into how these balances could be better achieved.
When you stood before them and presented your paper, who were you representing, or what were you representing? Were you the voice of America over there, or were you the voice of the Seventh Adventist Church or Christianity in general? Who did you represent?
Well, I certainly wasn't the voice of America. There were a number of other scholars, religious scholars from America. I think I represented Andrews University and the International Religious Liberty Institute, as well as the larger Seventh-day Adventist Church. But more than that, a general Protestant perspective on these things. Adventism isn't solely unique in our view of the importance of religious freedom and of conscience. So I felt that I was speaking on behalf of both my church, my university, as well as a strong Protestant tradition for believing in the importance of conscience. It was largely a group of scholars sharing with each other, putting a proposal together that we are actually submitting in a few days to the full G20 meetings, which take place in Bologna, Italy. So I'll be leaving to return to put the fruits of our joint research together with the rest of this religious scholars group. And we're seeking to have a more formal relationship with the G20 so that we can do two things. One, help to be part of the G20 policy review process so that when they make economic and social policy recommendations and guidelines, that we can have input into those, so that religious people, religious freedoms, and religious values are respected. When there are no religious voices in the room, often guidelines are set down that either ignore or are insensitive to or even violate religious beliefs and practices. So that was our goal, was to put together the best application we could. We had some of the representatives of the foreign ministers that came and met with us, helped us draft our framework back in May, and in the middle of September, we're going to be making a fuller representation of that to the full G20.
Well, give us an elevator pitch here of what you have concluded. I understand now where this all came from and how it's a joint effort. What is it you're going to be trying to say, and how is it different than what a lot of people believe?
So there's two aims that the group has as a whole. In putting together economic policy, people usually think in terms of dollars and cents,
right?
The bottom line value is this going to be more economically productive or not? And the problem is, it's hard to put a monetary value on religious practice and exercise and worship. And so a lot of countries, and your listeners probably have experienced this over the last year, a state will put together a list of necessary activities that are important to the functioning of the state. And so things like gas stations and airports can stay open, and in some states, things like casinos and nightclubs. But churches and religious gatherings are often way down on the list, not viewed as necessary or essential. And yet religious people, and even psychologists, would probably agree, many of them do agree, that religious activity, that worship, that fellowship is in fact essential to humanity, even though you really can't put a dollar and cents value on it, or it's hard to do so. And so this group wants to be part of that process, the process of determining economic restrictions during a time of pandemic, so that people can understand religion really is an important and even necessary part of the human experience, and that religious freedom is important, not at the expense of the public's health, but that it can be crafted. Like, if you can have airplanes full of people and casinos full of people and nightclubs full of people, you can also probably have churches full of people, as long as there is distancing and mask wearing and certain kinds of limitations and restrictions.
Okay, I'm glad you said that, Professor Miller, because recent history in the response of churches to this idea that, yes, we have a right to come together, we are essential, and by the way, we're not going to mask, we're not going to social distance, we're just going to praise God and God's going to take care of us. How do you deal with that mindset, especially on a global scale?
Yeah, so we're dealing with two extremes all the time, aren't we?
Yes,
we're dealing with
yes.
the one extreme that wants to shut everything down and not allow worship to happen at all. And then we have the other extreme that wants to be ignorant of basic health principles and avoid the counsel of government and health leaders and not have any restrictions and not have the masking and sing loudly and vociferously.
Yes.
And we think that there's a middle way between those extremes.
Mm.
That we can keep the churches open, but as long as the churches behave responsibly and masking is taken seriously. And, you know, all this can differ depending on the time and place and circumstances, but we here in the Midwest tell our conferences and churches, follow the guidelines of your state and county. If they're saying masks need to be worn indoors, then let's wear masks at church. If they back off and say the infection rates are low and we don't need to do that, well, okay, then that's fine. But we don't think there should be special pleading saying, well, we're a worship service, we don't need to wear masks or worry about distancing. That's not faith, that's presumption, I think the Bible would suggest.
Well, that's very good because, you know, I think of the 75-year-old woman sitting there with the Bible in her lap, and whether she lives or dies from COVID-19 can depend on that church's willingness or unwillingness to follow simple guidelines. If you could address that woman, Professor Miller, what would you say to her? How would you tell her to make the decisions of whether she attends that church or not?
Yeah, I think it's very important to attend a church that takes these matters and takes these guidelines seriously, you know. This is not something new to our era.
Right,
In fact, if you go back to the Hebrew scriptures and the Old Testament, there was a whole system of quarantining for health and safety there.
Yes.
People who came down with certain kinds of infections or diseases were quarantined, and the priests would have to examine them. And if they did turn out to be, you know, long-term infectious, then they would need to live outside the camp. In fact, we see this story reflected in the New Testament, yes, in the teachings of Christ when he healed lepers, yeah, right? He sent them to the priests to be examined and given a stamp of approval so they could return to society. So this isn't some newfangled invention, but this distancing and social care is something implemented and endorsed and promoted by the Bible and even by Jesus himself. So we need to take it seriously today.
Yeah, and of course in 1918, the issues that are just raging today raged then as well, as masking and social distancing and mandates. They fought this in 1918. We're fighting the very same battle today. So let's say in the last 2 minutes of the program here, you've made it clear that church attendance and gathering together to praise God is essential, just as much as going to the casino or going to a bar or someplace. But with that freedom comes a cost. Am I right?
Everyone wants freedom, but not everyone wants the responsibility that comes with freedom.
Yes.
Back in the, you know, the Protestants of the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries understood that rights came with duties and responsibilities. And we need to understand that today, that we have these freedoms to exercise, but they're within limits, within certain constraints. And we haven't even touched on the question of vaccines. I know that's a raging hot topic. Yeah. It's interesting to note that vaccines existed back in the early 1900s, mostly for smallpox. Our church leaders, the Adventist church leaders, generally went along with the vaccine suggestions and proposals at a time when the side effects were far more negative than the side effects are for the current coronavirus vaccine.
I often hear people say, you know, God's going to take care of me. Well, yeah, he is, but he may be doing that through the vaccine. Would I be right in saying that?
That's exactly right. If we're drowning in the ocean and God sends us a lifeboat, we shouldn't turn it away because we're expecting an angel. The lifeboat could be the answer to the prayer, and I think that the vaccines are a tremendous both work of humanity and in many ways an answer to prayer for saving lives.
Nick Miller is professor of church history at Andrews University in Berrien Springs, Michigan, and he's also the director of the International Religious Liberty Institute. Thank you so much for sharing your insights and perspective today on the program on these topics. We appreciate it so much. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you for having me.
And listener, we have a website for you, www.libertymagazine.org. You'll find a lot of resources waiting for you there. You can read some of the articles from the magazine. You can listen to these podcasts all at Liberty Magazine. This program was sponsored by Liberty Magazine. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Nick Miller inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258. Or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.